First in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
You're listening to Karen Cataline as a regular guest host of the nationally syndicated Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network.
The longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Well, good day to you, regardless of when you may be listening to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today, and we're going to start right off with our very first guest here on the Alan Nathan Show, host of the Mel Kay Show and Rumble. She's spent 20 years working in film, television, and investigative journalism in Hollywood. And boy, it's really fun to talk to her. Mel Kay joins us right now on the Main Street Radio Network. Hi, Mel. Good to have you along.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Well, FBI Director Christopher Wray has warned Chinese hackers lying in wait about attacking the U.S. infrastructure. I am surprised they're even warning Americans, given what we know about the administration. What say you about this? What can you tell us?
Well, first and foremost, I think we have to realize that something has to be done in the investigation into COVID and the CCP's relationship with the Department of Defense, Anthony Fauci and others. It's very hard for them to point at the CCP China when they just expanded surveillance with the pointing at the warrantless 702 and not at everything else that they're doing to surveil us on every front.
Okay, slow down a bit.
Agency.
Let everybody know what that is, because a lot of people are up to their eyeballs in news. And so please clarify what that is and what that does.
What, the warrantless 702 we're
yes.
talking about that just passed? Well, basically,
oh, that one, yes, of course.
Yeah. So they extended that. But inside that bill that nobody was talking about was actually an expansion of the ability for the NSA to team up with private businesses, including cable installers, anyone that has routers, anyone that has any access points in their business, be it, you know, a office building, a public space, whatever, that they would have the NSA come in without the customers knowing and become conduits to the spying that is happening through the NSA here and around the world.
Right.
So, I mean, if we're going to look at who's hacking America, don't we first have to look at who's working with the CCP in America? And if they are, and how they could not know with the extensive surveillance that they've been doing since they started after 9/11, at least from what we know.
Exactly right. And so what do you think is behind this big warning? Is it to cover their rear end or what?
Well, that seems to be what they do here. They kind of tell us it's China or Russia. And then, you know, months later, just like with COVID, we find out, well, wait, not so much. And what was the relationship and who was involved? It's the lack of transparency and total opaque nature of what is going on in the intelligence blob that, you know, the fourth branch, I call them, this new intelligence blob that was born of the Patriot Act and just keeps growing. How do they have all this intelligence and surveillance and these relationships in the EU and with the Five Eyes nations, and yet they're warning us that we're still vulnerable? They must not be doing such a good job if we're so vulnerable and they have what they have.
And maybe they don't want to do such a good job on a broader scale. I get frustrated with even people who are conservative who somehow think these are unintended consequences. I mean, you get what you're what we have is what they want, wouldn't you say? And if so, then the really tough question is, can we do anything about it?
Well, we have to still believe that we, the people, can do something about it. But it's my belief, and I think a lot of people that are really trying to, you know, wake people up. And it's not a right or left or issue at all, or Republican Democrat issue. It is right. It is a fundamental liberty and privacy issue. And we had plenty of surveillance and intelligence and all of that before the Patriot Act was passed, which I believe is fully unconstitutional. And even Ron Paul says to this day that there were people that didn't want to vote for it because of the surveillance aspect and growing an entirely new intelligence branch. But because it said Patriot Act and we were coming off of 9/11, they just did so anyway. And it's never been checked. And now it's grown into basically with no oversight, nothing going on. And we're at a place where the American people really have to decide what they want. Do they want full track and trace surveillance? As Ben Franklin said, giving up a little bit liberty for security. We deserve neither. Or do we want to take back into the hands of the people oversight, which has been completely, taken away from the people? And the people have been kind of beaten down to think that we are helpless, and we're not. We still have a constitution, but it just, they've weaponized the system so much that I think good people aren't willing to stand up. But we've seen in history that that's exactly when totalitarians take over. And that is where we are. And people have to just grasp that.
Right. Right. Well, and to bring a slightly, not so slightly pessimistic view, I certainly haven't given up. And I think there's a lot of people who are really waking up. The fact of the matter is, when you ask people what do they want, when something has already been forced upon them, then how do you blame them? Fighting back includes fighting back against people who forced it upon you in the first place, doesn't it?
Yes, but I think that we are forgetting that the states wouldn't have signed on to be part of the United States if they thought they were losing their power, and they haven't. What we really need to do is county by county take responsibility for our own country as individual citizens, where we are, where we live, because all of these tentacles of all of this need the participation of every county to function, especially the surveillance state, especially all the things that are coming in from the global, you know, parent company that's basically running America. There's so much we can do with our local jurisdictions, but certainly the state AGs have a lot of power, and only four or five of them are exercising that power. If we had 20 strong AGs and 20 strong governors backing them, we could do a lot of damage to that, to the, you know, the corruption and swamp in D.C. But we need the states to stand up. And that really means that the people have to stand up and get involved locally and get involved in their legislature state by state. That is really where the future lies for the people's power, in my opinion. I don't think there's much we can do about D.C. until we have a new regime in there that can use the Constitution to ably get rid of a lot of unconstitutional agencies and other things. But in the meantime, we the people have our local jurisdiction where we do have power.
Exactly. Great advice. For people who get a little overwhelmed at the whole idea of getting involved in your legislature, can you be more specific to give them the first steps that they can do? Because if everybody does one thing or a couple of things, then a lot of people will be doing a lot. So, yeah, why don't we break it down just a little bit in our last few minutes as to what would be the best way to get a lot more involved in our local government and in the legislature?
Well, first and foremost, everything is now online. So people should be looking around. You know, I'm somebody who believes that this UN 17 Sustainable Development Goals that has infiltrated our entire country is not pro-America. It doesn't live up to our values, liberty, everything, our constitution. So first and foremost, get involved. Go to city council meetings. Look online at what contracts are being pushed in your local area that seem to be against the Constitution or in violation. Look around, obviously go to the school boards, look at what's going on there. Make sure that you are keeping an eye on what they are passing locally that has anything to do with infringing upon your rights, and be vocal about it. I say start freedom groups. Like when we were little, we had neighborhood watch. If there was robberies and stuff, we should be having freedom watch groups being started in every neighborhood, every town, every city in this country of not left or right Republican and Democrats, just people that stand for liberty and freedom and transparency. We need to be the oversight. And on top of that, know who your state senators are, your state legislature. Go up, get three or four people. And another thing that I think we're not being proactive about is the sheriffs are elected. Those sheriffs should be answering to us. So get three or four friends. Get the sheriff to come to you at a group at your community center or whatever and tell you, what plans do you have if the grid goes down? What plans do you have if there's some kind of uprising? Where are the safe spaces? What is the plan to get out of town if something happens here? Everyone needs to be proactive in making the people that we elected work for us. It's fine to know who they are. I would like the people that work for us in every town, in every county, in every state to actually know the people's names as much as we know their names. And once we start treating them like they work for us, they will. They want to be reelected. So we got to start putting their feet to the fire to make sure that they do what we need.
Mel Kay, boy, now you know why she has her own show, because you really get down to details, and that is such a great thing. We appreciate you so much. You can get her at Rumble, the Mel Kay Show. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate your time. Thank you. Well, we're going to move right along after the break and discuss education and what's going on there with Title IX. Oh, my, lots. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Calling all organizations responsible for implementing all or part of a state's commercial driver's license program and agencies that provide commercial motor vehicle operator safety training. Federal grant funding may be within your reach. I'm Nikki McDavid, Commercial Driver's License Division Chief with the U.S. Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or FMCSA. The CDL program implementation and the CMB Operator Safety Training Grant programs help pave the way for safer roadways and a safer transportation environment. Prospective applicants are encouraged to learn more about these funding opportunities at fmcsa.dot.gov/grants. Together, we can prevent crashes, serious injuries, and deaths on our nation's highways. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today, and I'm excited to talk with our next guest once again. I think I've spoken with her before. She's the Vice President of Parents Defending Education. Caroline Moore joins us right now on the Alan Nathan Show. Hi, Caroline, or is it Carolyn? Either one, right?
Caroline. Thank you.
Okay, it's not either one. It's Caroline. You're here to talk about something that I've been asking for the longest time. The left fought and fought and fought for women's sports, Title IX, talked about women's sports incessantly, and now they're selling women's sports right down the river and allowing 250-pound men pretending to be women to pummel them in sports and elsewhere. What the heck is going on?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great question. I, for the life of me, cannot wrap my head around it. I mean, like you said, the Democrats, but also, I mean, everyone is pushed for women's rights. We've had these, we've had Title IX on the books for, you know, 50 plus years. And so to now say, you know, we don't necessarily know what a woman is, I mean, puts everything, you know, into a tailspin. And so, you know, it's problematic for every organization that receives federal funding. So it's public schools, but it also, you know, it goes into public sports, public school sports. And also, I mean, it goes into things like, you know, pre-K and that kind of stuff, any organization that receives federal funding for education in this country. And so this is going to be a widespread rule. And so it's very concerning, and people should definitely be, you know, have open their eyes and ears to what's going on around them.
Yeah, before we get to exactly what is this this new thing coming down the pike, what bothers me, and I realize conservatives don't have a loud voice because the propaganda media is so very loud, and it isn't just right versus left, as someone previously pointed out, but why is it that we can't get the message out that this is the exact opposite of what they said? Just like everything, they lectured us about race and race and hate and tolerance, and yet they are unbelievably bigoted and tolerant when they want to be. And why aren't they being called out? Why can't we get that message out? You are the anti-feminist. You're a misogynist. Use their words. You're a misogynist. You're against women's sports. Isn't that what they accused conservatives of when they got it passed in the first place?
No, absolutely. I think that you're asking the questions that everyone should be asking. Why when I call my mother and tell her, you know, this is what we're doing, and can you believe this regulation came out? She's like, well, gosh, I mean, my friends don't know that this is happening. And I find it, you know, crazy that people don't know that this is happening. But I think what you're saying is true. I mean, I think that this isn't really coming through on, you know, it's definitely not coming through on your regular news. And Fox News, I don't know. I mean, I guess they have, you know, Riley Gaines on once in a while, but no, for some reason, it's really not penetrating. And I think that the only people that are really seeing it are people who are engaged on Twitter. And I think that, you know, it's kind of woken up people like Elon Musk to be like, wait, what's going on? And so I think that that's kind of started a conversation. But for people who aren't online, you know, I think they really need to seek out their news to find out what's really going on.
Not only that, but this is being pushed down people's throats, and with the threat that if you don't go along with it, we're going to come after you. You talk part of this whole thing, a final Title IX regulations that they're doing compels speech. It forces students and staff to deny biology and forces them to use other people's pronouns. That's wholly against the First Amendment, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, our organization, we have sued several school districts on this very thing. Every student should come to school and be exposed to a wide range of thoughts and ideas and shouldn't feel like, you know, they have to keep their mouth shut because, you know, they don't agree with using preferred pronouns. If they don't want to use a child, another child's pronouns, because today they're Sally and tomorrow they're, you know, Samuel, they shouldn't have to, because kids know that those pronouns are not rooted in truth and fact. And so, no, absolutely, this is a First Amendment violation. And it's terrible because instead of, like we've seen, it's kind of cherry picked and, you know, large school districts across the country, this may make it so that any student can be punished in every school district in this country based on not using preferred pronouns, which is, you know, ludicrous.
You know what, Caroline? It's clear to many people that that's precisely what they want. They institute something that it appears is just opinion, and yet they force it down people's throats by institutionalizing it as a law, as a rule, and giving everyday people the opportunity, the sanction to persecute their fellow citizens if they don't get on the bandwagon. It's a real problem. I was listening last week to a thing where there's this new bizarre movement called furries in school, and kids come to school dressed as furry animals, and not only are they biting kids in school, I mean, you wouldn't think that this is real. Maybe it's a sci-fi movie, but it isn't. And they're demanding that normal kids who want to get an education bow to their wishes, speak to them they want the way they want to speak. It's the exact opposite of an individual who's supposed to take responsibility for their own body language and allow other people to have that same freedom. That's gone out the window. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with you. I think that they are pushing it down your throat so that you don't have, you know, you don't even think that there's a way around it, because if it's the rule, then it's the rule. Well, thankfully, in the case of Title IX, there are going to be a ton of lawsuits on this. And so I think that that is a good thing, because it'll have to go to the Supreme Court, and then we will actually have a law of the land, which, you know, that always makes me hope. I know.
We got a lot of sore judges. We've got a lot of corruption, I'm not sure. Yeah. That's what they're doing.
It's
lawfare.
The Biden administration, you know, overriding something that was passed by Congress, because that really is longstanding law. And so an executive order or regulation or whatever shouldn't be able to override that.
From your mouth to God's ear. Shouldn't, but does often.
No,
and then
true, but
you got a lot of these leftist people in Congress pushing it and saying that this is somehow a civil rights issue, which is the exact opposite. It's a civil rights issue for people being told what words they can use and what they are and are not allowed to say. It's really quite sinister. We got to go. I am so sorry, but I think that this infuriates a lot of people. And I know that they're going to want to know more, learn more from you and how they can get involved in this at Parents Defending Education. Could you tell them how they can find you, follow you, and read your stuff?
Sure. DefendingEd.org is our website with tons of resources for parents and community members on there.
Very good. DefendingEd.org or .com?
Org.
Org. It's an org. Thank you, Caroline Moore. We appreciate you joining us today. All right. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue with another great guest. Don't go away. We'll tell you about it right after this.
The Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is now accepting applications for 5 federal grant opportunities that enhance commercial motor vehicle safety. I'm Patrick D. Niemans with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or FMCSA. Last year, more than $125 million in grant-funded initiatives were awarded to promote access to commercial driver's license programs, prevent human trafficking within the industry, conduct commercial motor vehicle safety-related activities, deploy innovative technology efforts, advance transportation safety research, and more. Together, we can significantly reduce serious injuries and deaths on our nation's roadways. Prospective applicants are encouraged to learn more about these federal grant opportunities and how to apply at fmcsa.dot.gov/grants. Applications are due by April 19. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
Calling all accredited institutions of higher education, federal grant funding may be within your reach. I'm Evangela Hollowell with the U.S. Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration and a proud Hampton University alum. FMCSA offers a CMV Operator Safety Training Grant to educational institutions with opportunities to expand the number of commercial driver's license holders possessing enhanced operator safety training. This grant assists historically Black colleges and universities and minority-serving institutions. It also helps future alum like me get involved with the commercial motor vehicle industry. Prospective institutions with accreditation recognized by the U.S. Department of Education are encouraged to visit fmcsa.dot.gov/grants to explore the funding opportunity and learn how to start the application process. Together, we can significantly reduce serious injuries and deaths on our nation's highways. Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
People do some pretty cool things in their 40s and 50s. Why should saving for retirement be any different? I mean, they go back to college, learn new instruments, start skateboarding.
Whoa!
Okay, maybe that one's not for everybody, but saving for retirement is. With aceyourretirement.org, you can get on track with your retirement savings no matter your age. Just have a 3-minute chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach from AARP. You'll get personalized recommendations based on your input that are easy to understand and work with your lifestyle. It's quick, easy, and free. Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back.
Snarly move, Dad.
Thanks, sweetie.
So wherever you are in your retirement savings journey, head to aceyourretirement.org and start chatting with Avo today. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, and we are delighted to have with us next the Vice President of Communications for Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. Previously, she served as a senior manager and humanitarian with the American Red Cross National Headquarters. Welcome, Emily Davis, to the program. We're happy to have you.
Thank you, Karen. Happy to be here.
Great. Well, I know that you're not happy with Trump's stance that he announced about a week ago on abortion. And full disclosure, I pretty much agree with him. And I think this discussion, although I want to give you plenty of time to talk about your stance, why you feel the way you do, and why you want to persuade others, listeners, to support the same. This is a perfect example of how civil, ordinary people can have disagreements and not want to ban, obliterate one another just because they disagree. It just isn't like that. Nobody wants to censor anybody here. So, Emily, give us an idea of your stance about this and why you think Trump is wrong.
Yeah, first off, I just really appreciate the conversation. You're right. I mean, it is so important because this is actually the conversation that's happening across the country right now. I mean, I'm having this conversation with friends and we're engaging, and this is exactly how it should be. Absolutely. So thank you for the opportunity to have that civil discussion.
My pleasure. Yeah.
I think one of the most important things to remember and what we need to footstamp is this isn't an either or. For us, this is states have every right to put in limits on abortion, but also we should recognize that there is a national consensus in this country. Polls show 7 in 10 Americans do not want late-term abortion in America, even after 50 years of Roe v. Wade. And so there is an ability there to get rid of the scourge of late-term abortion, that dismemberment procedure that you see, and have some national limits. So, Karen, for us, it's not an either-or, it's an and. And there is an ability to do that. And one thing I do want to point out is that this is a human rights issue. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that the United States is a complete global outlier on this. We are one in seven countries with an elective abortion past 20 weeks, so right around that five-month zone. And you've got seven states right now in this country, plus D.C., where for any reason, all 9 months, you can have an abortion. And yes, it does happen. Even the Guttmacher, which is the Planned Parenthood's former research arm, they show about 63,000 abortions past 15 weeks happening with those dismemberment procedures, or more. So it is definitely happening. It's something that puts the United States as a global outlier. There is an ability to do both. States can be as ambitious for life as possible, but we can all agree on, you know, getting rid of that scourge of late-term abortion and working towards that. That is really the vision that we're laying out there right now.
Okay. So when you say it's not an either or, it's an and, is that really contradictory to what Trump is saying to bring it back to the states? Or are you're advocating a national moratorium on late abortions?
A national limit, that's for sure, with exceptions.
Limit.
For rape, incest, and life of the mother. That's exactly. And actually, you saw President Trump talk about this in different interviews, and he really debated this in his mind. You saw him talk about this with the different Sunday shows and different mainstream media where he said, you know, we're going to sit down at the table, we're going to negotiate, we're going to, you know, he talked about a certain week or a limit. So this was something that he was definitely contemplating before he announced the states' rights position.
So in your position, what is that cutoff point? Is it third trimester or second or what?
Well, we're really trying to be informed by the science here. I mean, if you look at the science on late-term abortion and when babies can feel pain in the womb, in 1973, they didn't have ultrasound or sonogram technology when they put forward Roe v. Wade, and they certainly didn't have the scientific technology to understand when babies could feel pain in the womb. But thankfully, we do have that. And doctors are providing anesthesia to children in the womb by 15 weeks. And so we say when the child can feel that pain of the abortion, when science proves that, can't we at least all agree on that as a limit? And then we're also informed by the polling that we see across this country that continues to show whether it's an NPR or a Gallup or, you know, a more conservative poll, you see Americans reject past that first trimester zone on abortion.
Right. The issue that I'd like to zero in on, because of course this has been a decades and decades long debate, and the left is using it, it seems to be their only issue for the entire campaign. Mm-hmm. You know, they've turned it into a freedom issue, which is preposterous, and saying, you know, they don't care about any other kind of freedom you might have, but you absolutely, it's sacrosanct to have the freedom to have an abortion. So I don't necessarily disagree with you. What bothers me is these blanket national central planning rules, because a majority of people feel a certain way does not mean we have to keep doing these national laws, because national and even international, everybody's getting in on the bandwagon to force other people into things. We just finished talking to somebody who they're changing Title IX. So you have to be forced to address people in a certain way. What we're losing is this tolerance. I understand abortion is different and unique in many ways, but we're losing this idea of states' rights, of tolerance for differing opinions, and it worries me that this side of the aisle, I mean, it's not an aisle anymore, it's a free-for-all, wants more laws, more national moratoriums, and et cetera. Can't we just We got rid of Roe v. Wade, the national law. Why are we going to put another national law in its place?
Well, I would say there's a fundamental misunderstanding that's often propelled by the left on how a woman, goes forward with an abortion. I don't know if people know my story, but I had two unplanned pregnancies by the age of 22. And one of those was, both of them, I was told by various people to abort. But one of those, I did have abortion coercion from her father. And a recent study came out last year showing that the majority of women, two-thirds of them, in fact, that had abortions, said they were either forced, coerced, or it was inconsistent with their values. So I think the left often points this very false story of abortion in America and doesn't actually acknowledge the realities on the ground for women, thereby saying it's abortion at any term, at any time, and this is really the woman's empowerment movement. It's not. We see the Democrats have gotten so far away from what it was in the 90s, which was safe, legal, and rare.
And rare.
That abortion. Right.
No, now they're right. Celebrating it with the Empire State Building. I mean, there is no doubt about that. I think that there have become a lot of new pro-lifers, if you will, because of that behavior. Because now there's a celebration of abortion, and they said that would never happen. And that's exactly what a lot of things are happening. They said would never happen. And the slippery slope is real.
Yeah, well, that's why I am in the role that I'm in now. I wasn't, I didn't have any intentions of going into this pro-life role, but I started to see this insane, drastic push for shouting your abortion as empowerment and
right.
No limits. And I just could not abide to that. And to your point earlier, or question earlier, the Democrats already have their federal game. So my big question to, others who do have the states' rights position is, what are we going to do to counter that? They have already, Biden and Harris have already said this is their campaign. We are going to do what we can to, the Democrats in Congress have said we're going to do what we can to nuke the filibuster or add another justice, all of these things, pack the court so that way we can change this. But they've already put forward federal legislation that they are declaring that they're running on to move forward, which will wipe parental consent, which we've seen in some of these ballots that they put forward, that will wipe conscience laws for doctors who don't want to perform abortions. It will force mm-hmm. taxpayer funding of abortion across all 50 states. And that's their game plan. They've already stated it.
Yeah. It's a contentious issue on purpose for them. I think it is a direct attack on people of faith, as many of the issues, the so-called wedge issues, I think are designed mm-hmm. to marginalize people of faith, to delegitimize their position, to call them racist or a million other ists because they fundamentally disagree. What worries me also, and I better hustle because we're out of time, is that this one issue, God forbid, we may not have a country left to argue this. You know what I mean? There are so many issues. We can walk and chew gum at the same time, but my, oh my, there are so many issues. I wish I could talk to you longer. I hope you come back when I'm on. Emily Davis, how do people find you?
Oh, please go to sbaprolife.org to find me and to see what we're working on. Thank you so much, Karen.
It is my pleasure. SBA Pro-Life, Emily Davis. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will be right back on the Ellen Nathan Show right after this. Don't go away.
A new minimally invasive treatment option for prostate cancer shows successful outcomes without the side effects that often come with surgery or radiation. Prostate cancer affects 1 in 8 men in their lifetimes. The success of MRI-guided transurethral ultrasound ablation, TULSA, represents a revolution in whole-gland treatment for prostate cancer. Patients now have an alternative treatment option that has a favorable side effect profile compared to surgery, radiation, and thermal therapy. In the TULSA procedure, a small catheter-like device is inserted through the urethra into the prostate, where the tissue is heated, killing the cancer cells while protecting the sensitive nerves around the prostate. Dr. Stephen S. Raymond, professor of radiology, urology, and and surgery at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA.
This image-guided therapy maximizes our ability to kill cancer cells while minimizing collateral damage to the prostate to achieve the ultimate trifecta in prostate cancer treatment, full local cancer control while maintaining urinary continence and potency.
For more information, go to sirmeeting.org, sponsored by Society of Interventional Radiology.
The Open Directory platform provider JumpCloud recently surveyed international IT decision makers. Not surprisingly, one of the topics that was top of mind was AI. Most IT professionals see AI as a positive. However, many are concerned with its implications on security. Most respondents said that AI is outpacing their organization's ability to protect against threats. JumpCloud offers the solution to help manage potential security threats posed by AI. JumpCloud VP Eric Brown.
It's important to be aware of AI's possible security implications so you can take precautions to use these tools safely. JumpCloud offers security without the complexity. We give admins the tools to help users follow best practices, defend against common attack vectors, and eliminate the sprawl of accounts and passwords that can lead to risky access and data breaches.
To learn more about how JumpCloud can help protect your organization, visit jumpcloud.com.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job,
not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner? Or a 14-year-old girl who signs up to every after-school activity not to make friends, but just to get something to eat? Or a retiree who fell ill and had to choose
between getting medicine or groceries?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And by the way, if you'd like to access the Alan Nathan Show and the massive archives of the Alan Nathan Show, all you got to do is go to www.mainstreetradionetwork.com, and there you'll find a veritable plethora of shows that's actually like a history of America in all the years that Alan Nathan has been doing talk radio. So I have a little bit of time to give you some of my thoughts. Let me tell you, boy, there are so many things that I could talk about, but I wanted to cover this article and my thoughts about it that came out in the New York Post. And I'll just read you the headline: Police storm Yale University's campus with riot gear, arrest students as hundreds stage an anti-Israel protest. And this was reported by Sahar Tartak, editor-in-chief of the Yale Free Press, who was covering the protest when she was suddenly surrounded by demonstrators. Quote, "There's hundreds of people taunting me and waving the middle finger at me. And then this person waves a Palestinian flag in my face and jabs it into my eye," Tartak told the New York Post. "When I tried to yell and go after them, the protesters got in a line and stopped me. Yale president Peter Salovey sent students an email late Sunday warning that the school, quote, will pursue disciplinary actions according to its policies amid the ongoing demonstrations." Now, this is fundamentally good news about something that is fundamentally horrible news. Finally, it seems, Yale is taking some kind of action. Now, I haven't been following every school, but we know that Jew hatred, or you can call it anti-Semitism if you like, but the hatred of Jews is utterly rampant on college campuses and has exploded after October 7th, when one of the most barbaric, unprovoked attacks — they will probably disagree, I can't possibly litigate all of this, so I'm just using this as an example — one of the most barbaric attacks against women, against children, against innocents, against civilians who were not armed. And the left, and I would argue this administration, and the propaganda media have gone about flipping the script and flipping the narrative as to who is the perpetrator and who is the victim in all of this. Now, the left gets a lot of mileage because things are so complicated. The more complicated you make it — some things are not so complicated when it comes to gang raping and murdering innocent, unarmed civilians, and so much more, killing babies. And this supposedly offends the left, who have been lecturing us incessantly about rape, about women's rights, about, oh, it's for the children, about bigotry and intolerance and a whole host and litany of things we have been lectured about in the last we can all remember. It is always the most arrogant and the most ignorant that appoint themselves lecturers and experts on subjects. And what happens? On a dime, on a New York second, the radical left, which is rampant on college campuses and frankly in the squad, in our Congress, and so much more, can flip on a dime and suddenly be A-OK with gang rape. They can be A-OK with the murder of children and civilians, as long as, and I hate to say it, you're murdering the civilians they hate. And how come they hate them? Because they're Jews. They don't know these people. And this is the very essence of bigotry, ladies and gentlemen. When you hate somebody because of a group they belong to, you don't know them personally, because you're a collectivist. And you think of everybody simply as a member of a group, not as an individual, not as a person with a heart, a soul, a mind. Well, then you're practicing socialism, communism, and tyranny. Why is it that this false argument about racism, racism, racism. Everything is racist. Plane trips are racist. Parks are racist. Mark Twain is racist. Everything is racist. What is really behind that? What's behind that is, in my opinion, partially, I can't reduce it, boil it down completely, because there's a lot going on here and a lot of it is propaganda. But what's the reason we've become so race obsessed, or at least the left has been, and they wanted to make everybody else race obsessed, where you can't even enjoy a great classic anti-racist movie like Blazing Saddles. Now, it's racist because it uses a word and makes fun of bigots. Now, it's racist too. All in order to reduce people to pegs in a wheel. This is to depersonalize us all, ladies and gentlemen. It is a conformist, anti-individual ideology. And what's diabolical about it most is that it's being billed as we're going to tolerate differences. It's diversity. No, it isn't. It's not diversity. It's reducing us all to nothing more than a collectivist identity. And you can see it everywhere. You can see it in Trump haters, Christians, white men, people who disagree with gay marriage, anybody who is of faith. The list of hatred and bigotry against these groups or people who may have that opinion in common is a disgrace. And that, I would argue, is why there is so much Jew hatred on college campuses today. Why aren't they being asked, where was your tolerance? Where is your anti-bigotry now? They must be challenged on this. We're going to take a break. When we come back, this is a top of the hour break. We'll have a whole other hour of the Alan Nathan Show here on the Main Street Radio Network. Stay tuned.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.